the inmate population in Wisconsin's jails and prisons reached a 20-year low in December of last year. That's according to data from the Department of Corrections. That came after years of concerns about overcrowding and with a sense of urgency related to the rise of COVID-19. A new report digs into COVID and incarceration and what it means for the future. That report comes from a group including the Wausau Pilot and Review and Madison 365. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about how prisons and jails in Wisconsin adapted during the pandemic or tried to? Are you someone who works or has worked as part of the system? What's your experience been like? Have you or someone in your family been impacted by being in jail or prison, especially during COVID? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Shireen Seward is founder and publisher of the Wausau Pilot and Review and host of the Wisconsin Public Radio show Route 51. Shireen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
And Robert Chappell is executive director of Madison 365. Rob, welcome to you.
Thanks, Rob. How are you?
Good. Well, let's start with you, Rob, and this 20-year low when it comes to our prison, our incarcerated population in the state. Can you talk about the number, how low it was compared to recent standards?
I can tell you about Dane County specifically. That was kind of my focus. And I can also tell you about the state prison or the state jail population as relates to Department of Corrections holds, because those are the ones that have the more flexibility. So those are the ones that were able to be reduced quickly over the course of the pandemic. In Dane County, the population went from about 700 down to just a little bit over 500. Many of those 500 that were remaining in the jails were not subject to sort of sheriff's jurisdiction. You know what I mean? They're on parole holds. They're on federal holds, et cetera. At the state level, those county jail populations that were on state parole and probation holds dropped by about 53%. It went from 3,680 on March 2nd, 2020, down to 1,723 by April 20th. So that, you know, just a little over a month, they were able to get that many people out of county jail custody.
And Shireen, you focused on Marathon County. What did you see there? What kind of changes during COVID?
Very similar numbers-wise. I can tell you that before COVID, we were talking about the need for a $75-plus million jail because overcrowding was so bad. We have a jail here that really is designed for about 250 inmates and was constantly at 400 or above. And the county was paying other counties to house those prisoners. So we had a real problem on our hands, and there were already talks underway about how are we going to manage that? Do we need a new jail? Are there things that we can do that could potentially lower those numbers? And sure, I mean, by 6 months into the pandemic, we were down to about 250. So, you know, back to capacity. So very, very significant drop. And I can tell you that combined, Wisconsin's state prisons and local jails, if you look the whole statewide, there were fewer than 30,000 inmates in December. And that was the lowest number in more than 20 years.
Shireen, can you talk about the strategies you saw in Marathon County and elsewhere to limit overcrowding? What kind of decisions were made to say we're going to have fewer people incarcerated?
There are a couple of things that happened. And of course, jail corrections officers can only take control of so much, right? Mm-hmm. So the jail itself did some creative thinking, and they got rid of our Huber program. So everybody that would have been serving jail time and then let out on Huber automatically went to electronic monitoring if they were eligible for that. So we didn't have the whole Huber wing was emptied. But then also we had a number of inmates that successfully petitioned for lower bond amounts, and judges let them out on a signature bond or a much reduced bond. So there was that level as well. But it all kind of started with the police department saying, we have to be judicious about how many people were actually bringing into the jail. Because obviously, you know, corrections officials knew that incarcerated people exposed to the virus were getting sick and dying at a much higher rates than the general public. So the police department would use summons for the first time. And before the pandemic, the Wausau Police Department had never used the summons. They just would arrest and bring them in. Now it's a lot different. So they're bringing fewer people in the beginning.
And Rob, did you see similar strategies in place in Dane County?
Yeah. First of all, if I could mention just like the reasoning behind the urgent need to change the way they were doing things is not just for the protection of the inmates, which is obviously important, but also the jails do not exist in a vacuum, right? They're secure facilities, but there are still people going in and out. There's staff going in and out. There's inmates coming in for a day or two and going back out. So they're and you're in a tight, congregate facility where the virus can spread really quickly and then work its way back out into the community. So there's that. That was the thinking. But also one thing that I was struck by, not having reported on criminal justice, but not really being part of the system, how many different agencies and systems need to cooperate to make something like this happen. As Shereen mentioned, it's partly incumbent on the police to exercise some discretion in arresting and making arrests, but also there's something from the judiciary. The judges have to be able to, issue a warrant that doesn't necessarily require an arrest. And then you have to have the sheriff's office, and then you have to the Department of Corrections working on the parole and probation holds, and you have to have federal courts willing to release people, which they are not really as willing to do. So there's a lot of different agencies and systems who are used to working together, but not necessarily to solve a common problem like this. And so there was a lot of different strategies. There's, obviously when you go through the criminal justice system, you have many different stops along the way. And every one of those stops is an opportunity to find an alternative to incarceration, which, and the other thing that struck me too, is that I heard repeatedly that a lot of these strategies were things that had been worked on for years. Like, this is a thing we've been trying to do. We've been trying to reduce the jail population. We've been trying to find alternatives to incarceration for years. And this just really accelerated it, made it really urgent to do right now, which is part of why we wanted to look at this, is to think about, if we've been trying to do this for a long time, we've now proven that we can, will some of these changes become permanent?
We're talking to Robert Chappell, executive editor of Madison 365, and Shereen Seward, founder and publisher of the Wausau Pilot and Review, about a piece they worked on looking at incarceration in Wisconsin, how it changed during the pandemic, getting lower numbers into jails and prisons, and whether those changes might stick around for the future. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, or your experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Cliff is with us in Racine. Cliff, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Cliff?
Well, I happened to be in prison up in Oshkosh during COVID, from the beginning of it until about 4 weeks ago. And all I can say is, prison is not a good place to be in any circumstances. And then when COVID hit, it got even worse. I joke with my daughters when I would call them and say, at this point, it's like being in prison. Mm. Because once they finally got to the point of taking it seriously, which actually took them a little while, everything was closed down. We couldn't go out to the yards anymore. We couldn't even go out to the day room anymore. We were locked in ourselves, with being pretty much in solitary confinement with your cellmate. For the last year and a half I was there, I ate every meal sitting on my bunk, which is an interesting experience.
Yeah.
But when they started to take it seriously, they did put a good set of rules in place that would have been effective had they been followed. But they weren't. And when I say they weren't, it wasn't by the inmates. It was by the COs. For example, when they first came out the rules, if we had to go to the bathroom, we had to stand outside our door, leaning on the door, until a CO came and told us it was okay for us to go to the bathroom. Well, we would stand there for a half hour and 45 minutes, and the COs wouldn't come around. So you have no choice but to go. And at the same time, there is a rule that you could only have six inmates in the bathroom at a time during COVID. Well, the only time I saw six or less people was at 3 o'clock in the morning in the restroom. So they had rules in place, but they weren't followed. And in prison, if the COs don't enforce the rules, the inmates are just going to break them by the nature of who they are.
Cliff, thanks a lot for sharing that story. Robert, I think I heard you nodding along there. Did you have thoughts on what Cliff brought up?
Yeah, I think it's, again, I'll defer to Cliff on what the actual experience was like, mm-hmm. but I did, having reported on some other stories related to the system, it's just really, when you're in a congregate facility like that, where everything is just close quarters by nature, by design, it's just almost impossible to actually, no matter what the rules are, whatever you try to put in place, it's just almost impossible to mitigate the spread of a very contagious virus, which is how one out of two inmates was actually infected because of what Cliff talks about. It's just impossible to enforce all those mitigation strategies in that kind of facility, I think.
We're picking up our talk now with Shereen Seward of the Wausau Pilot and Review and Robert Chappell of Madison 365. We're talking about changes in Wisconsin's criminal justice system during the pandemic, in part aimed at lowering inmate populations in jails and prisons, whether some of those changes might stay in place. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your questions, your thoughts. Do you want to see our overall incarcerated population in jails and prisons go down in the state? What kind of things do you want to see happen? Do you have a personal experience to share from anywhere, being involved anywhere in that system? Call 800-642-1234. Shereen, as Rob mentioned a few moments ago, part of the point of your reporting here was to say, are these changes, these COVID-linked changes, going to change things for the future? What kind of things are you hearing from the people you talk to?
Well, what we're hearing is that some of these things will stay. Some of these things are most certainly going to stay. The getting rid of the Huber program in Marathon County and letting inmates serve their sentences at home so they can care for their children and be with their family and keep their employment while freeing up jail beds, that's something that is going to stay. And I know Rob wants to talk about some of the really positive stuff like video visits and remote court appearances, but I do want to say that what we are hearing from prosecutors is that we are very concerned about what's going to happen in the future, because so many cases didn't go through the system during the pandemic. Basically, trials were put on hold. So you've got people who are waiting for trials for 2-3+ years. And when those cases finally make it through the system, the concern is that we're going to need 1,000-bed jail. And that's what we're really concerned about. But Rob, in part of your reporting, you talked about some of the really positive things that, like the video visits, for example.
Yeah, if I could piggyback on what you just said about the backlog, Dane County District Attorney Ishmael Azan said that Dane County is going to face a similar thing, but that there are a lot of people who are awaiting trial out of jail rather than in jail, and are therefore making a case for themselves that they maybe don't need to be in jail. So when they do go to trial, they might be more likely to be able to convince a judge to give them either a suspended sentence or a community service type sentence rather than a jail sentence. But the other thing that has changed, and maybe both in the prisons and in the jails, is the use of video and remote technology, which is something we're all doing for everything. We've all learned how to do Zoom, and I think we'll all be doing lots of more Zoom meetings and Google Meets and everything like that going forward. And the same is true in the criminal justice system. Kevin Carr, the state secretary of corrections, talked about just the savings to taxpayers of getting more used to doing court appearances by Zoom, where you drive somebody from Stanley to Milwaukee for a 5-minute status conference. Like, just do that online. This is so much easier and less expensive. However, Dane County ran into some problems with that, with the Dane County jail being old and not really equipped for that. So that people ended up doing their court appearances by Zoom through the food slot in their cell door, which a lot of advocates thought was really dehumanizing, so they got into a little trouble with that. But But overall, the idea of doing things more remotely and it does make sense. And the other thing is visits. You can have more family visits, better family visits by videos. In some cases, Kevin Carr talked about the fact that if you're doing a video visit with your family at home, you can actually get a glimpse of home, right? You can see the Christmas tree. You can see your dog. You can see your nephew. And that can give folks a bit more maybe incentive to do what they got to do to get to re-enter, to get back.
And Shireen, did you see that sort of thing happening in Marathon County, more openness to those video hearings and or those video visits?
Yes. And jail staff here, they were quick to point out that this was very beneficial for many of the reasons that Rob stated, especially for juvenile cases. I mean, there's a real, if you don't have to shackle a juvenile and bring him into the courtroom, it takes a big element of the fear factor out of that. So they do think that these video visits will continue, and also it made it easier for representation. As we know, there is a huge shortage of public defenders, and in many cases here in Marathon County, we've had to find public defenders or defense attorneys from well out of the area to represent clients here. So they're able to appear via video. They don't have to make the drive. It helps with their caseload. It helps with the overall cost. So there are some significant benefits to that.
Now, Rob, I know members of the public might hear fewer people in jails, fewer people in prisons, and wonder, is this a public safety problem? Are there some people who should be incarcerated who aren't under these emergency measures or down the road? What kind of things did you hear about people addressing those concerns?
Yeah, that's a great question. And basically what I heard is that they're at the state level, especially when they're talking about parole holds and probation holds, they're actually taking a more proactive approach, looking at the public safety risk of a particular individual. Pre-pandemic, pre-March 2020, it was basically if you violated your probation or your parole, you just went to jail. Like that, there was just no thought about it. There was no discretion. They didn't take the time to think about it or look at it. Whereas now, the reason that they went down by 53% and not 100% is that they started to take into consideration public safety. And if somebody was in on like domestic violence charges, they'd be more likely to stay to decide that that person should stay in. Or if it's somebody whose probation violation was, you know, missing an appointment, and their crimes were not necessarily violent and they did not pose a public safety risk, then that person could come out. And there hasn't been, as far as I'm aware, maybe Shireen can, hers are different, but there hasn't been a significant public safety issue in terms of these particular folks who've been allowed to, you know, live their lives in the community as they go through the system rather than in custody.
Yeah, Shireen, what have you heard on the public safety side of things?
In some ways, especially when we're talking about putting people on an electric monitor rather than having them in the Huber wing, jail officials say in some ways we're safer because we know where they are. In the past, they'd sign out for Huber and be gone for 12 hours, and sometimes, you know, you just never really knew where they were. But I think it's really too soon to tell what the overall impact will be on public safety. But I do know that police are really looking to evidence-based decision-making when they determine whether or not to bring someone to jail, period. And jail should be a last resort. It shouldn't be a automatic thing that happens when an officer responds to a situation. Some people absolutely deserve to be in jail and need to be in jail. Other people may not and may do better without. So police are learning how to differentiate and how to make those decisions in a more meaningful way.
And Shireen, you had mentioned at the outset that there was a thought that Marathon County was going to need a new $75 million jail. With these changes, and maybe they're going to stick, is that conversation changing? Are people thinking maybe we don't need that facility?
Oh, right now people are thinking that we maybe don't need that facility. But as I mentioned earlier, there is a significant backlog in cases. So it really remains to be seen whether or not we will see a huge explosion of new jail sentences and whether what that's going to mean to the overall community. And, you know, there's also a push for more justice decisions that are restorative justice, some alternative justice programs. And, you know, those too could keep more people out of jails and free up bed space and free up money for taxpayers.
Rob, just 30 seconds or so left. Rob, yeah, go ahead and leave us with some thoughts.
I was going to say that this is all happening in the backdrop of a similar debate here in Madison that's been going on in Dane County. It's been going on for, I don't know, 10 years about building a new jail. And the new jail here in Madison is not necessarily just about overcrowding. It's also about safety and, you know, mental health capacity, capacity to take care of people's health. There's been a lot of opposition to that jail. And I think this just fuels that that maybe we don't need to build a new jail. Maybe we need to rethink how we handle people with mental health crises and other alternatives like Shireen was talking about.
We'll leave it there. Rob, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Shireen, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Shireen Seward, founder and publisher of the Wausau Pilot and Review, host of the WPR show Route 51, and Robert Chappell, executive editor of Madison 365. You can read their report on Wisconsin's prisons and jails at WPR.org.